Welcome to the Better Call Saul edition of the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the Bruce Lee to my Ollie, it's Dan. Hey, long time no podcast talkie-talkie, Dan. How you doing?
Yeah, it's been a little while. Doing good. Good morning. Good night. Everything's good.
It's pretty... Better. Better than usual?
Yeah? Wow.
I don't know. We are so out of practice. You know, it's funny. This may or may not be the longest break we've had in between recording. I think it is. And it's also the longest break we've had in between Better Call Saul seasons. So there's some sort of interesting little parallel there. It was definitely an unplanned, but I think in some ways probably a much needed hiatus for us. I think we just needed a break. And
yeah, yeah. I think we're both keeping pretty busy with our thing lately.
Yeah, it's funny. I had one person in quote unquote in my life who has been hassling me about not getting back to writing because I haven't written anything since up until recently, since like early May. And he was like blaming it on the podcast. And I was like, "What are you talking about? I haven't done a podcast since June, and even then, I was hardly ever doing it." You know, dude, I've just been busy. And I haven't felt the muse. It's like, plus you've never listened to the podcast. How would you even know that? Like every time I see you post it on Facebook, it makes me angry. It's like, no, shut up, you idiot. He'll never hear this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Just in case he does hear it. Shut up, you idiot.
Yeah, thank you. So we are back. We're back to talk about what I think oftentimes has been mutually our favorite series to both watch and podcast about. I know I might have said that a little bit about a certain Legion show, but I think Better Call Saul has been, of all the shows that we've talked about since maybe Mad Men, it's still been the one that's been the most consistently good, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't gotten any letdowns with this show as of yet. So before we delve into the premiere, I thought it might be convenient for a few folks out there just to give a quick little refresher on where we left off back in season 3 with the story of Jimmy McGill and the rest of the Albuquerque crew. Now, just to remind folks what had happened back in season 3, Jimmy's license had been suspended for weeks at that point, due mainly to his tampering with those Mesa Verde files. But he was more than getting by due to cashing in on that Sandpiper settlement. Of course, we will remember that came at the expense of fracturing the friendship between a number of little old ladies at the assisted living facility. So in that finale last year, he orchestrated a situation where he literally broadcasted his misdeeds probably in the most callous way possible to all the seniors at the home. Huh. It helped bring those ladies back together, but it was at the expense of his relationship with all of them and really killed any future he would have of being an elder care lawyer. We also left Kim. She was still recovering from her car accident, you know, with her arm in a cast and so on. And she ended up agreeing with Jimmy that they should shut down their office. This was a woman who essentially was working 100 hours a week. She was finally looking like she was starting to let things go, at least for now. On to other characters. Hector Salamanca had a massive heart attack in front of Gus Fring and Juan Bolsa, and of course Nacho. And those fake pills that had been substituted by Nacho clearly made matters worse. So at the end of that, we saw Hector being carted off and a possibly knowing and suspicious look on Gus's face as he looked over at Nacho. We also will remember one odd thing about the finale. Mike wasn't in the finale, so you'd have to go back to a previous episode. Last we'd seen him, he was agreeing to a gig with Madrigal as a quote-unquote security consultant. This was set up by Gus. This was, you know, when they're starting to talk about his money laundering operations and so on and so forth. So this, you can see this was the beginning of the Gus Fring relationship with Mike starting to take shape towards the end of season three. And finally, after being forced out of his law firm by Howard and receiving the first of three big severance checks, Chuck essentially has a breakdown straight out of the movie The Conversation, which I recall mentioning on that podcast, because he ends up tearing apart his home looking for what could possibly be keeping that electric meter running outside. Later that night, the entire house is in ruins. He clearly and deliberately knocks over a lantern that sets his house ablaze with him in it. And that was how the season ended. And yeah, that was where we left off almost 14 months ago. Which, for peak TV fans going way back 15-something years, last time you had to wait for a show that long was something like The Sopranos, where they make you wait like more than a year for a new season. So, but of course, we've been anticipating this, you know, pretty much since the day after the finale. So it's finally here. So, anything you want to say before we get into it?
No, I'll say I could have used a recap for my mom to listen to before we watched it. Because let me just tell you, she's just clueless sometimes. So we were watching the first scene of this, and she didn't understand what was going on with the gene stuff. She's like, "Who are all these people? What's going on?" I'm like, "Mother, we watched this for four seasons. Like, this is like been how they started like every season." Then I had to explain, like, you know, the difference. Like, this is the future after Breaking Bad, and it's just like, it was extremely frustrating trying to explain this. I can't think of a good analogy at this point for, like, you know, like something you would see in a TV show. Just imagine, like, Back to the Future 2 when they're trying to, like, show the different timelines. But just imagine if, like, you know, like, you're trying to explain it to, like, Einstein the dog. Like, that was the level of comprehension going on here. So, yeah.
Or someone who hadn't seen Back to the Future, which would probably complicate it even more so.
Yeah.
You know, that reminds me, I didn't think to include that in the little recap, because you're right, the beginning of every season gives us a little bit of future Saul, or actually he's Gene at that point. So where we last left him, if I'm remembering correctly, I think that was when he was, you know, obviously he's always at that mall, and I think he sort of led to the capture of a shoplifter or some kid in the mall, but then he yelled that he should get a lawyer or something.
Yeah.
But I think just Gene seems to always be under a certain level of stress and paranoia, which we'll be talking about momentarily. And I think it led to him collapsing. And at that point, we didn't know did he just have an actual heart attack, or was it a full-blown panic attack that led to him falling unconscious? But that was where we left Gene, pretty much on the floor of Cinnabon.
Yeah, so I suppose now that I've got the first thing on my list of notes, the words "confused mother" underlined out of the way, we could probably start talking about the episode.
Oh, one more funny thing, then we'll get to it. That's relating, it's all about the show. So I was over my friend's house yesterday, you know, binging a different show on a different streaming service, whatever, or watching one. And I got a text from a friend of mine who had just started watching Better Call Saul via Netflix. And she was telling me, "Oh, this is like my absolute jam." She's a big Bob Odenkirk fan, apparently, but she had never seen Better Call Saul before. And so she was like, you know, send me a few texts like that. And my first text back to her was like, "If I recall, you never really watched Breaking Bad. Am I remembering that correctly?" And she said, "Yeah, she watched like some of the finale because everyone was talking about it, but other than that, she's never seen Breaking Bad." And I was like, "Okay." I was like, "You know what? That's interesting. You're going to have a very unique perspective. You'll lose a little bit of the oh, look, it's so-and-so, and there may be the occasional reference or joke you might not get once in a blue moon, but other than that, you can watch this show fine, you know. You know, actually, there are clearly things that she doesn't know as far as the fate of certain characters who are already on this show. In fact, pretty much all of them, if she only saw part of the finale, come to think of it. So, and she said herself, like, it'll be cool because after I finish watching this, then I'll start watching Breaking Bad. And I was like, yeah, that's a different way to do it. And that would be interesting. I wonder, I can't imagine what that would be like, but yeah, that you'll have a much more bigger sense of, oh, look who it is when Saul shows up, you know, in the middle of season two and so on. So I just thought that was interesting because I think we had talked in the past about how you wouldn't think anyone who hadn't seen Breaking Bad would be watching Better Call Saul. But if you think about it, it's certainly possible.
It happens. I've heard about it on the Insider podcast that they've discussed. Oh, you know, people every now and then they hear from people that have watched the one and just never watched Breaking Bad.
I am fairly sure I knew people who rarely, if ever, watched Cheers, but they watched Frasier. So it, and I'm sure there's plenty of other examples of that as well. So it can happen. Okay, so with all that said, so let's start talking about the season 4 premiere of Better Call Saul. I'm going to confess right off the bat, I was delinquent in watching the credits to see who wrote and directed this episode. By any chance, did you happen to notice that? It just occurred to me. I totally forgot to do that.
No, I didn't. I apologize.
No, don't apologize. I looked at my old notes and I would see written by, directed by. I kind of forgot to do it this time around. It's not really vital. Of course, I'm still looking it up while I'm rambling here just for a minute, because I'm wondering if Gilligan himself, I'm sure he probably has the writing credit, but I'm kind of wondering who directed it. Okay, writer, it was, okay, obviously you have the created by credits from Gilligan and Gould. Oh, Peter Gould, who's the co-creator, wrote the script. And Minky Spyro directed it. I know that name. I think that person has directed episodes of this before, am I right? Yes.
Yes.
Directed one other episode. So, there. I've directed a bunch of Downton Abbey episodes. That's an interesting credit for this. All right. Anyway, let's get to the episode. So, as we were just saying a few moments ago, once again, we join, you know, Jimmy / Saul / Gene in the future in that Cinnabon in Nebraska. What's funny, I'll say right now until you mention it, I had kind of forgotten because it's been so long and I only rewatched the finale. I didn't watch the entire season. I forgot that every season begins that way.
Yeah.
So I actually had a big smile on my face. I was like, oh, and it was funny because I kept thinking it was only going to be like really brief and then they were going to, you know, suddenly fast forward to modern day. Not modern day, to 2003, actually. So I couldn't remember if in the past, and I'd have to go back and watch, and probably anyone listening probably knows this and is going, God, you're not really a good podcaster, are you? Did the scene that begins each season with Gene always take up the entire first act before? I mean, I guess it did. Maybe it did. I can't remember.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
It probably did. They're not going to shortchange him. We'll give him like 2 or 3 minutes. Because I noticed it was like almost a full 9 or 10 minutes there. And I was like, oh, that's a lot of Gene. Then I realized, well, it's all you're going to get all season probably. So maybe it's not that much if you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think last season we had 2 different scenes with him, right? Or was it just one? Yeah.
I think we always say.
Yeah, I think it was the shoplifter one and then the collapsing one were separate.
They were separate? See, I always think they only do just the one in the first episode, and we always speculate they might do one in the finale, and they never do. So I think it's been a while. The one. I think it's just the one. And if we're wrong, forgive us. It's been a long time.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time, working on the show since then. Just like the producers of Game of Thrones, have spent a lot of time probably making crap. So screw them. But yeah,
that didn't take long. So. Of course, what I enjoyed about this was, again, just watching with just trying to fill in the details ourselves, but how much of his life now is just still, other than clearly suffering from a certain level of depression, there's so much fear and paranoia, attached to so many just incidental, trivial things for Gene
Yeah.
now. I mean, the
Right.
whole, go on.
It's definitely understandable too. I mean, I'm not sure why I was thinking about it. And then this one, maybe I suppose like I kind of tied it to the previously on Better Call Saul thing with the what's going on with Hector and whatever. But you definitely could see like I mean Saul was definitely involved with the cartel and them kind of stuff. I mean, at least in some ways. So you could imagine that, I mean, just there'd be all sorts of different possibilities of, bad criminals could come after him, maybe Heisenberg's really alive and can come after him in his mind, the cops, whatever. So I was just thinking, I mean, I could, there's a, so many different ways he could be screwed here.
Right, you have to set your memories back to those final several episodes of Breaking Bad to remember what his mindset was, because he pretty much figured he had to get out of Dodge and have his identity changed by the cleaner, the guy that I think it was Robert Forster played back in Breaking Bad, because at that point, after what Walter had done at the end of season 4 of Breaking Bad, and then how everything was just getting ratcheted up that much further throughout season 5, he was fearing for his life, and hence why he went and did what he did. I mean, obviously, the stuff with the nurse and the ID was great, because he kept thinking, "Oh, is there a flaw with that ID? Is this something that sets off an alarm somewhere that, this number doesn't actually work, or the Social Security number doesn't actually work?" Although you'd think the people who were behind this were careful enough not to let that happen, and apparently they were. But what did you think about the cab driver?
I didn't know it. They definitely were setting it up as like, there's something significant about it. As to what it could be, I have no idea, man. But it definitely seemed like it was more than just his paranoia, there.
Because if that's just a regular cab driver, that's like the creepiest cab driver I have seen in quite some time. And, living in New York City, I've seen a few. Just the way he was staring at him in the mirror, the little Albuquerque isotopes, air freshener seeming to almost be like a calling card there. The fact that the taxi never moves after he leaves, and we keep watching it in the frames, like, that taxi's just not moving. I kept waiting for like a car door to open or to start going backwards or something, and then maybe then just peel away. But we left it with him just scooting away, right? I think that was how it ended. So we could set it's conceivable they could pick that back up. God, beginning of season 5.
Yeah, well, at least it got picked up for a season 5, so they don't have to play that, the network jerking around for until what, episode 8 or whatever they did last, well, like the last couple of years. So
Yeah,
that's
this is
good
the
anyway.
I think other than maybe when the show first premiered, because I think when the show first premiered, they shortly thereafter they said it was getting a second season, but every time after that we've had a wait. So it's nice that they said right away there's going to be a fifth season, and they've also kind of made it clear that that doesn't necessarily mean it'll be the final season.
Yeah, they definitely had. They had normally in this kind of case. I mean, I was expecting when I read the first article about that it would be the that they were going to say it was the final season, but they didn't. So that's kind of nice. The chance of, maybe one more would be pretty sweet.
Wouldn't it be something if there ended up being more
Yeah.
Better Call Saul episodes and Breaking Bad? That would be really interesting. We'll see. There is that debate that always seems to happen now between people, and it's a debate that I laughed at, just a couple of years ago. And now, while I still have the same opinion, it's not quite as so firmly entrenched where I can't plausibly see why someone might like Better Call Saul better. I mean,
Right.
one of the nice things I think we both like about the show and fans as well is although it's got so many bloodlines to Breaking Bad and so many connections and overlapping and so on, and there is one specific thematic similarity of watching a main character pretty much change or transform, so to speak, much like Walter White did. But other than that, it's a very different beast in a lot of ways. And
Yeah.
I like the fact that it's not, and in a way, to use like the comedy thing, and I know because you're a huge fan of them, it's kind of like Frasier never tried to be like Cheers. It did its own thing, and it worked really well. And there are people who probably like Frasier better than Cheers. I think you actually are one of
Yep.
them. And in a way, I think that's what they've been doing at Better Call Saul. It's really, making its own niche. And now that we're in season four, it's really, I think it went from something which I wouldn't call it a vanity project, but kind of like, oh, almost like a cute stunt, like, oh, let's see how they can get away with this and how
Yeah.
far they can go with it. And now it's like, no, this has become, and maybe it was from the get-go for some, I know it might have been for us, but at this point, this is one of the highest quality shows that's on, period. Television,
Yeah.
streaming, whatever. I mean, it's just, and
I think.
whatever facet you're looking at, you can really commend it on, I think.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a conversation we were having earlier today, but comparing, it's kind of like Breaking Bad is Double Indemnity and Better Call Saul is the apartment, where it's just, there's really nothing to com one's darker, one's a little bit funnier, and but there's really not much to complain about either one of them. And it's even difficult to compare the two at this point. I mean, that's why, I mean, I don't, I kind of hope Better Call Saul manages to keep, doesn't get completely swallowed up in the Breaking Bad stuff, and of course, I've always been a proponent of like, yeah, I don't need to see Walt. I don't need to see Jesse. I don't want to appeal to the jackass on the internet that, thinks Jesse's name is spelled Jessie and just wants to see that because they're like, endless. So, not that I don't like that kind of stuff too, but.
I would say I'm of two minds of it, and neither mindset is all that revolutionary. On one hand, I totally agree. I don't see any need or reason to have either of those two characters appear. However, if Gilligan and Gould, want to, I have the utmost trust in them to do
Oh
it.
God, yeah.
And
Yeah, it ain't gonna be stupid.
they continue, even in, I've read a few articles in the last 2 weeks. One was in a Tim Weekly article, which was actually more about Breaking Bad, but they did refer a lot to Better Call Saul, especially because they're talking with, Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston and Vince Gilligan and so on, about the idea of them showing up on Better Call Saul. And the two of them are, Cranston and Paul are both totally for it, if Gilligan wants to do it, because they have the utmost trust in it, and Gilligan keeps, he brings it up himself all the time. It's not simply fans of it, it's him doing it.
Yeah.
And he's made mention he wouldn't want to do it in some cheap way or some like Hitchcockian, oh look, there's a guy walking by and it's Walter White or something. He would want to do something that would actually, make sense for the show.
Right.
And the fact that we can't, maybe off the top of our heads, can't conceive of something that would really make sense, well, we're not them. And
No.
we're not being
Yeah,
paid to do
both.
that,
Both series, they've proven to find ways to, just do things that we never would have expected, but that make perfect sense after the fact. And there's no reason to expect they couldn't do that with these kind of cameos, needed or not.
Right. One of the things I love about when you listen or read stuff that Gilligan and Gould, when they talk about the show, and it's a refreshing change from the way I listen to a lot of other writers and creators, which is not to disparage them at all. I mean, everyone does their thing, but I love the idea that, like for Better Call Saul, I think it's kind of well known at this point that they went through a bunch of different ideas before they ended up with the show that they have now. Originally it was going to be a comedy. It was a half an hour. It was going to be a half an hour show. They said, oh, if I think in one of the articles, he makes reference to, he looked at Breaking Bad as being 25% comedy and 75% serious. And they thought they would just reverse that for Better Call Saul. I don't think that's quite what it turned out to be, really.
Not this episode.
No, certainly not this episode. And then when you hear about some of the ideas originally, it was almost going to have more almost a goofy procedural like aspect to it, like and like Chuck was supposed to be going to be like the mentor, the Mycroft Holmes kind of character to Jimmy or whatever. And then and Howard was just going to be just the usual adversarial jerk all the time or whatever. And they realized they had something different once it got rolling. And it totally changed the way they went about things. And it's kind of thing he said about when they first started, like the Jesse character in the beginning of Breaking Bad, and how that was a character that was supposed to be a short-lived character initially. And then when you watch, it's like, really? You weren't planning for him to be like basically your second lead? But that's one of the things with Gilligan. Like sometimes he doesn't know what he's got, and then until he has to start working on it. And his famous thing is about the machine gun in the trunk of the car, in the middle of season five. Like they had no idea what they were going to do with that. They didn't have the plan all set up. They didn't have it all sketched out. When you hear like some writers talk about that, oh, they're in the writers' room. They have it all sketched on the board, and they just pass out cards to everybody. This is, we don't know what we're how we're going to figure this one out. I just love the idea someone just went, I know, Nazis or something like that.
And before we start talking about the teaser, I just got to say that having been in the location before, I'm impressed with how they continue to find new ways to shoot in that fucking Cinnabon. Because I mean, just all sorts of weird, clever angles, and there's not a lot of room to work in there. So, just kudos to the crew to continue to find interesting ways to make it look.
I also love the conceit of doing something which, because since the show we're watching is the present of the show, so 2000, the show takes place in 2003, so therefore when we're watching the Gene scenes, for lack of a better way to put it, those are essentially flash forwards. I love the idea that something that's in the future, the flash forward, is in black and white. Because I just love that that kind of turns it on its ear. That you're using a much more artistic retro way of shooting that. And on that, the music that they use is they tend to use this music that's probably at least 80, 90 years old, very old jazzy bluesy kind of stuff, which really fits. It's really lovely. It's like it gives a certain poignant beauty to a Cinnabon that you wouldn't think would be possible. But yeah, again, so that was basically our taste of Gene for presumably the season. I keep thinking they'll do more every season, and they don't. So I'm going to assume until we hear otherwise that will be it. Even though he spends in these interviews, Gilligan does mention the Gene stuff a lot. So it makes you think that they've got a lot more planned. Otherwise, God, how patient are they? That they're basically just putting out like, 7 to 10 minutes worth of material a year. It's like talking about inching a story along. My gosh.
Pretty awesome.
Well, that essentially, but that encompassed the entire first act, was just, catching up with Gene, who basically didn't have a heart attack. It was essentially, it sounds like it was just purely a panic attack. I thought it's kind of sad that he obviously spent all that time at the hospital, and initially his choice is that he's going to go back to the mall. I can think he wouldn't want to just go straight home. Although he ended up, it looked like he ended up going home at the end of it because he was trying to get away from the creepy cab driver. But that was really all we got with Gene. Assuming he's going to go home and put on his videotape of old Saul Goodman commercials or something. And when we picked up after the commercial break in Act Two, we realized this show is picking up, pretty much right where they left off. It's the ne at least with Jimmy and Kim, it's the next day or the next morning, and we get a little taste of what morning life is like with Jimmy getting ready before Kim can arise. And again, there's something about all the little tiny details and the little things that he does, which are just there's just this nice, precious poignancy to them. And what I like about seeing that now is when we distinguish that from when we watch all the minutiae with Gene, which has such a heavy sadness to it. Where with Jimmy, at least at this point in time, until he gets a certain, listens to a certain phone call, there's a more sprightly, you know, buoyancy to it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's the next morning. Oh, they did that nice little effect by having the little, you know, fiery embers kind of floating around in the air as they, you know, pass over all the file boxes and everything and eventually into them in bed. So they got a teensy tiny bit artsy there, but I kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah, I thought the, you know, using the symbolic ashes, just, you know, special effect is kind of neat. Once I figured out that it was just, like, you know, symbolic.
Yeah, because, you know, Chuck's not next door or something. But I was, right. I mean, because initially I was getting, there was a, I will admit to maybe a couple seconds worth of confusion, and maybe I looked away for a second, because when I saw the embers and I saw, like, the boxes with the Mesa Verde stuff, for a second there, I was thinking, wait, are there boxes of files at Chuck's house and we're seeing the interior of that? And then I was like, no, that's Kim's stuff. That wouldn't be with Chuck. And then I realized what they were doing was more just, they were just doing that little artsy effect. I don't mean to use the word artsy because it sounds like I'm being derogatory. I don't mean it that way, but you know what I mean.
No, only idiot listeners that don't like black and white movies would think artsy is derogatory. But I had a similar thought too. I mean, I for a second I thought it was Chuck's, and what I thought we were seeing, and also there was the fact that there was like glare on my TV, so I couldn't see Withercraft. But until I didn't realize that it was floating over, like we were seeing Jimmy laying there in bed. Mm-hmm. So like I briefly thought like we were actually seeing like ashes, fiery embers from Chuck's house, like floating into like a neighbor's house, which would then start on fire, because that was like had been brought up in conversations, you know, I suppose all the way back in season one, you know, talking to the doctor the first time that Chuck was, you know, got arrested or whatever. So I thought like, you know, maybe we were going to see that until I realized what was going on.
Right. And then when obviously they get the word, and there's something that they do a couple times in this episode, and this is one of them. And it's one of my things I always admire, and I try to do whenever possible, but I'm not as talented as these guys are. Writing shorthand, where we don't need to show or hear something. We can just cut right to it. So we don't need to hear the phone call or him get the message. We just, you know, next thing you know, it's the Esteem. I always love remembering that his car is named the Esteem, speeding over to the burning, the smoldering remnants, I should say, I guess, more smolder, of Chuck's house. And thus begins Jimmy being in kind of a, I don't know how to describe it, he's kind of in a numb state of shock to a certain degree for most of the episode. And I guess it begins on that bench outside Chuck's house. There is that moment, he spends a lot of time, and because the house is behind him, he's staring at that thing on the telephone pole. Am I remembering correctly, like, is that like way back in maybe like season one? I seem to recall someone, maybe it was him and Chuck, or maybe it was just him staring at that before. Am I remembering that correctly? Does that ring a bell with you?
It sounds familiar. I didn't have time for a rewatch, so I don't know, but it definitely seemed familiar.
Yeah, there was something. I seem to have this recollection, and maybe it's because it was someone with an electric line, and of course the whole thing with electricity and Chuck, and you know, I feel like that. Again, apologies. I also obviously didn't do a rewatch. It's just one of those things that's just ringing a distant bell with me, and I'm not. And maybe I'll bone up on it. I'll read about it online later. So I'm sure someone cited that somewhere. And if
it might have been like when like Jimmy and Chuck were sitting out there, you know, on the picnic bench, maybe like, you know, Chuck looked at her or something like that.
I just remember that was something that happened like very early on in the show and they were like sitting on that bench or something. So it was almost kind of a big deal that Chuck kind of even went outside or something. But then again, maybe I'm just creating that in my head. I don't know.
Yeah, or it could be like an X-Files like throwback, because there was always like something sketchy going on with that kind of stuff in X-Files.
Right. The other thing I was trying to figure out was, I got a little, just a little bit confused with the timeline, based on something Jimmy says. And even as I'm thinking about it now, it doesn't quite make sense to me. Here's my question. Because he, when I thought that in the finale, that the whole business of Chuck being ousted from the law firm was earlier in the episode. And Chuck and Jimmy have their really horrible conversation middle of the episode, which is the conversation where Chuck essentially tells Jimmy that you never really mattered that much to me. And that he's never, that's the whole thing where he tells him he's never going to change, he's always going to hurt people over and over again, and so on and so forth. And I thought later on he just starts becoming obsessed with the electric, the electric meter and whatever. But maybe it's bad. I just watched the damn episodes. But maybe I put those o events out of order. And maybe the settlement thing comes after that. Do you remember?
No, I guess the timeline of the episode would be, Chuck gets ousted. He decides he's just gonna hang out at home and just be cool. He can handle the electricity again.
Right.
And then Chuck's all confident because he can handle electricity. Jimmy shows up, and then Chuck just kind of lays into him, treats him like crap. Doesn't bother telling him about the HHM thing because, he's just doesn't give a crap
Right,
anymore.
right.
And then after that, then chewing Jimmy out, potentially, treating him like that potentially just kind of like lets the electric psychosis back in, and then he just loses his shit, and then.
I guess the confusing thing is because Jimmy says it was 5 days ago, and the day after, this is the morning after the house burns down, and the impression when I saw the finale was that all happened the same day.
No, I got the yeah. Well, it seemed like Chuck was spending a great deal of time trying to figure out why he had, why the power wouldn't like why he couldn't stop all the power to his house. He spent a lot of time tearing about the entire house, getting the electric company to try to figure out what's going on. So there's times in there for making service calls, doing all the stuff to stuff to his house. He was taking stuff off, checking the power meter, and it seemed like, and I could definitely could, it seemed like something that took place over a few days. I don't remember specific night and day things, but I definitely remember, he was doing a
Okay,
lot of stuff.
I just got the impression it was all that same day into the night. That's the way I felt it was presented. So again, Jimmy is also not, how shall we say, he's not the most reliable narrator either.
Yeah.
So he might have been misspeaking a bit there. So I'm not sure. Again, it was a very small detail. I wasn't really sure about it, but I just thought I'd bring it up. But yeah, it's kind of a very the beginning of a couple major somber scenes or moments in the show. It's very low key because basically that's the entire act two. It's the next day, and then he finds out that his brother's been has died, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, the only note I have for that act is the phone call from Howard, like the line reading by Patrick Fabian is just perfect for that kind of call.
Yes.
I was really, really, really impressed. Just exactly the right kind of notes you would expect from somebody that's confused and serious and broken and feeling guilty at the same time, and just rock solid, good shit.
Right. The note I actually wrote, I wrote it's dot 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 Chuck from the I was on the when he was hearing the answering machine message. The way he said that I thought was really nice. Oh, and he does some amazing work later on, which we'll talk about, and which is also one of the scene probably became for me ended up becoming the most memorable moment of the entire episode, and the most depressing, potentially depressing moment of the entire episode as well. But with Act Three, we finally get back to Mike, who, as I said, wasn't in the finale, so we haven't seen Mike in a really long time. And we find out it's his last day working the toll booth, and this it turns out his scumbag boss even wants his windbreaker back. I was like, what kind of cheap bastards would do that? But then again, I was wondering, you might have some insight into this, I think. So I know when people work, say, at a fast food place and you have to wear, a certain type of uniform or outfit. If you leave, do you have to give back the uniform?
You're supposed to, but it doesn't happen super often, especially now that like our company does direct deposit instead of like you having to pick up a paycheck. So people are usually just, well, basically when somebody quits, they just ghost you and they don't bother bringing their shit back.
That makes sense.
But that's just for like my place specifically. I'm not sure other places probably might actually like care enough to try and like not let these fools whatever.
So we see Mike, it's his last day at the toll booth, and then he goes to see his, I guess, what do we, it's his daughter-in-law and his granddaughter, right? That's the setup there, because he's her pop-pop. So we get to see them for a few moments. It seemed like there was a moment there when he was staring at the check that he had received from Madrigal. I kept thinking he was going to call up like HR or accounting because he thought there was something weird with the withholding or something. Because I remember him just going, and they were like focusing the shot focused on like the net and the withholding, whatever. I was trying to figure that out. But it seems, at least for the brief Mike segment we get here, seems like he's a little bored. It's almost like this is what it's like to be retired, and Mike's not someone who I think is in retired mode. Obviously, he's got a job, and we know what it is. But I think he's restless because he's just sitting there watching local minor league baseball games and so on. And then when we switch back over to Jimmy, again he's still in his numb state of shock, and we get that call from Howard, where Howard wants to read the obituary he's composed for Chuck to Jimmy over the phone. And after a while, Jimmy just ends up putting down the phone and not even listening to the rest of it, until Kim picks up the phone and tells Howard it's fine, whatever. So I kept wondering if at a certain point, if Jimmy was going to lose it just a little bit and say something like he's using Chuck's obituary like it's an ad for the law firm or something, since he keeps talking at the law firm throughout the obituary. But that clearly didn't happen, which is good because that might have been a bit too predictable anyway. Again, a lot of this felt like it was just table setting for reminding us where the characters are and what they're doing. I mean, what's really interesting about Better Call Saul that a lot of other shows can't get away with is it can take its time, and they can have scenes where maybe not, quote unquote, very much happens. But there's so much attention to nuance, and the performances have such a nice little timbre to them, the way, and measure to them, the way Kim looks over at him, or the look on his face, the way he sighs or whatever. Everything has such a nice grounded weight to it that it really, I think personally, I think it keeps the viewer invested in it, as opposed to just being bored by it and like, oh, well, we get on with it. I personally never, I don't think either of us get that feeling with the show. And I know we, I can't, and I can be that way with shows. It's not like I'm not the most patient person in the world. But for some reason, for this show, I always feel like every scene is almost like, I think we almost like to savor it, if that makes any sense. Dan.
I agree. Yes.
I don't remember if there was anything all that more significant about that part, though. I don't think there was anything that really stood out beyond Howard reading the obituary, maybe. and I kept waiting for when he was going to mention his brother. I thought it was significant that he finally does mention him when Jimmy's not listening. And it's almost hard to hear, but I had the subtitles on the whole time, captioning, I should say. And he mentions and survived by his younger brother, Jimmy, who followed in his brother's footsteps and stuff. So I thought that was interesting. So then the next act, Act 4, we picked up with the Hector Salamanca thing. And they actually, this is the one, I think this is the only point in the episode where they actually replay a little bit of what happened in the finale. I don't think the angle of Hector being wheeled into the ambulance was in the finale necessarily. I don't remember that shot, though it might have been. I'm bad with the memories nowadays, kids. But the whole thing with Nacho and Gus looking over him, that was taken directly from the finale, I thought. And they truly picked it up right where they left off in the finale.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Now, what's interesting is like when we saw the finale, they really did that thing where they imply that Gus suspects something.
Yeah.
But then again, really. But remember, sometimes actors are given certain directions where the director or the writer, director, whoever, wants them to do something a certain way, so there's a certain ambiguity to it, and thus we choose to read that into it or not. But there's no, we don't know that for a fact. If that makes any sense?
Right. Yeah.
The thing I always think of, and I'll go back to a show a lot of our listeners are fans of, Lost. There was that moment in season 2. What was her name? The girl that Hurley had the crush on.
Libby.
Libby. Thank you. Remember there was that moment on the island where she kind of looks at him and everyone was talking about it because then we saw that she was also in the madhouses, whatever. And we were all reading something into it. It's like, oh, she knows. She knows. There's something wrong with her. There's something going on there. And of course, they never did anything with it, so we have to assume that it never was because, spoiler, they killed her. But, but I remember hearing the actress talk about it, and they told her, just play it this way, so that way people don't know. So people just choose to read what they want to read into it, which is actually, it's a nice, little direction. It's like, you look like you know something, but it doesn't mean you really do, because sometimes, I do that all the time. People think I know stuff all the time. I don't know anything. But, so what happens here is that I guess after a phone call, after getting on the phone, Gus tells Nacho that Juan Bolsa wants to meet with him. And just to remind people who Juan Bolsa is, that was one of the guys, one of the lieutenants who works with, I guess, I don't even know if he might be another Don himself, but he works with Don Eladio from the cartel. And we'd see him in Breaking Bad as well, if I recall.
Right.
Basically, this was just to make it clear that everything has to operate as it did before. And, he doesn't really know Nacho, but, they'll have to trust him, etc., blah, blah, blah. The whole time, Nacho's trying to get rid of those fake pills. And it was interesting because I was thinking, just leave them in your pocket. What are you so worried about? Is someone going to search you? But I could see someone in the moment thinking, yeah, this is, I want to get rid of this incriminating evidence ASAP. I just thought it was interesting that he was focusing so much on that little grating and the hole in the grating, and because he did such a good job of, dropping those pills in the pocket in that other episode back in season 3,
yeah.
I was like, oh, is that going to be Nacho's thing where he's got like such amazing, precise dropping aim?
Right. Yeah, I'm pretty sure whoever he talked about this in advance last season, I think he talked to Mike about it, right? And I think Mike told him that he would have to find a way to make the swap, and I think he probably said something on the lines of he would have to get rid of it. He might get searched. I mean, not necessarily, but something like that. Where as he was trying to get rid of it, it definitely seemed like this is something that I remember somebody talking
right.
to him about.
That makes
before.
Sense. That sounds very familiar to me. And yeah, if I put my thinking cap on, it does make sense. But I think the two key things that we get here that happen are, number one, the conversation between Gus and Juan Bolsa, where Gus is pretty much certain that someone's going to try to move in on the Salamancas now that Hector is in the hospital and is incapacitated. And he says something along the lines of, that it's going to lead to a war, which leads to chaos, which leads to the DEA getting involved. So I'm kind of curious, obviously, where that's going and who exactly Gus has in mind, or if he's even thinking of himself to a certain extent. Because who would be the someone that's going to move in? I mean, obviously they could introduce characters we haven't met before. I mean, that's certainly it. Or there could be something more insidious, because I wouldn't trust Gus, So I was very curious about that. Do you have any thoughts on that before I skip to the other thing?
I don't think so.
I really find it fascinating. I mean, here's something we don't normally give too much credit to on the show. They've done a nice job with the makeup, or however, maybe it's just how they're shooting. Gus Fring, the actor's was it Giancarlo? What's his name again? What's the actor's name? Do you remember?
Giancarlo Esposito.
Esposito, thank you. Because he generally does look like he's younger than when he was on Breaking Bad. I mean, a lot of the shots, I was noticing that. And maybe they just darkened his hair up a little bit, because probably dealing with Walter White for a few months probably grayed him up a little bit, I guess. But the more interesting thing, and the thing that maybe kind of was pondering, was afterwards we see Nacho stop on a bridge, and that's where he finally disposes of those pills. But then we discover that someone's watching him, and it looks like it's one of the cousins from the Salamancas. Who's watching through kind of like a binocular telescopy kind of thingamabob, whatever it was. And he's also got this tracker.
Oh, that was Victor.
Oh, that Victor? Oh, that
Yeah,
was, you're right. Aren't the,
yeah.
you know what? I'm thinking about the freaking ads I've seen for the show. You're right. I'm sorry. That's
Yeah, no,
Victor.
it's cool. Yeah.
Thank you for correcting me, because that would that.
You probably were just distracted by like the really, really awesome like camera work they were doing in that scene with Nacho there by the river, because I mean they were doing some really nice shots.
This would have been the one episode that someone finally listens again and writes a review. Doesn't get his facts straight.
It's
Happy,
fine. It's one
happy,
11 in the morning,
happy
one eleven
Valley.
in the morning New York time. So it's
There you go.
okay.
And I've had a long but good day. And I still have Mission Impossible Fallout's heavy on my brain. I saw it just before I started watching Better Call Saul.
Did you like it?
Yeah, good stuff. Last three, I would tell people. You could probably skip the first three Mission Impossible movies, although there's some good stuff sprinkled throughout them, and just watch the last three. Although this one does reference stuff from all six movies, which is a first, I think, for the series. But it's very good.
Cool.
He may be a Scientology kook, but Cruise knows how to deliver the goods when it comes to. I mean, and crazy stuff he does in this movie, and plus when you realize he actually does a lot of the stuff, which is insane. Because you watch it like, oh, that's not blue screen. He's crazy.
Yeah, I personally, I don't see any criticisms of Cruise. The Cruise doesn't have to do with Scientology, without Scientology. And so, and he doesn't like spend a lot of time just like going around like trying to come to my house and make me worship fucking Zord or
Aliens.
whatever the name of the thing is. So I just, so I just, people like to complain about that just because it's like hey, I saw this on the internet. Let's be a cliche, but the guy's a hardworking actor who does a good job. He doesn't have to do like anything, and he just keeps working hard. So I got respect for him. I like his stuff. I don't remember, other than like the horrible unibrow that he has like an olive Top Gun for some reason. I don't have any problem with Tom Cruise.
I still haven't seen Top Gun.
You haven't seen Top
I've
Gun?
seen parts of it. I've never seen it straight through. I know.
Yeah, it's not. It's just watch Dirty Dancing instead. It's a lot better. Top Gun's kind of crappy, but
I still.
still, you should. His fucking unibrow is just awful in it. Just fucking awful.
So it was Victor. So, yeah, which makes a heck of a lot more sense. But what's this deal? Now, the tracker. Now, isn't that the kind of thing that Mike was screwing around with in the previous season that they're with the car and
Yeah, it's a callback to last season because, I mean, that's what they were using to track Mike, and then Mike turned the tables on him and followed him back. So it's just kind of, the same thing. They're using the same technology they were using on Mike because, why, there'd be no reason for them to stop.
All right, so basically this is Victor, so he's tracking Nacho? Is that what's happening here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gus was suspicious about, the way he was acting. So then he just, so they decided to put a tail on him and see if he did anything to confirm that. Now, I suppose since presumably Gus wants to get some kind of, get up in that sweet Salamanca territory business, now he'll have something over Nacho and can kind of,
Oh yeah, and to kind of basically contradict what I was saying earlier, this is the scene, therefore, that kind of confirms, yeah, Gus was suspicious of something. Some idiot thought it was one of the cousins and not Victor and didn't realize that in the moment, so he just figured out on it while he was recording a podcast. Anyway, it's 1:11, like you said, or 12, whatever. All right, so then we get to Act 5. And for the first solid 2 minutes plus, felt even longer. I was basically the only note I wrote was like, I wrote WTF is that? I was like, who the hell is that? Who's this guy? Did you think it was deliberate because the way they did it initially, because they shot it in a very long shot? We see this suburban home, even though I could tell it wasn't the same home, thankfully.
Yeah.
But you see a guy, he's bald, he's got glasses, he's wearing like this. Button down tie, short sleeve shirt, kind of a whatever. And I was like, are they screwing with us just a little teensy tiny bit? Just for even, I mean, obviously, I never thought it was actually Walter White, or in it, because it wouldn't, of course, he wouldn't be bald either. But
Yeah.
just for a moment, I thought they were like just being cute. I thought they were being a little cute just for that moment there.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think it's certainly possible. I didn't notice that. I was, but I, you know, I noticed. I think they're maybe being a little bit cute too when they had the scene with Mike and his granddaughter, and they were using the hose from last season, the sprinkler hose, and it's like, I liked how they, did that.
But I just I kept but that scene was it was
Yeah.
they were taking so much time with it, and I was like, okay, not his name is Barry. Okay, why am I watching? And then we get this whole it's a ridiculously long build up just to show that Mike had took his ID. I was like, wow, that's you just went really far just to establish, hey, this is the guy whose ID badge Mike swiped to get into Madrigal.
Yeah.
And basically, for most of this act, we have Mike basically being an actual security consultant for the
No,
company, which is not exactly what I think they had in mind.
once I figured out what he's doing, I think I laughed out loud. So it's,
It was.
but yeah, like of course he has to, like, he like has to like actually earn that fucking paycheck.
Yeah, I think, he went from he's bored at home, and he's like, well, I'm getting paid to be a security consultant. I might as
Yeah,
well consult on the security. And it just goes on and on. But it's hysterical. Oh, we also get this moment in like the break room. Now, this is 2003. I love the fact that these two guys in 2003 are having an argument that's really straight out of like 1973. Because it would make a heck of a lot more sense for because neither of these guys are old. They both look like they're, 20s, 30s tops. And they're having an argument about who would win in a fight, Bruce Lee or Muhammad Ali. Again, I mean, I love the fact that someone would be having that argument in 2003, but it was like, that's a weird one. 2003, I think it'd be like Mike Tyson and whoever was like a big, MMA fighter at the time. I don't know. That was really funny. And Mike has to interject, does Bruce Lee have a gun? Which,
Huh.
which makes, it's like, no, does Muhammad Ali have a sword? It did kind of remind me of similar silly childhood debates I would have as a kid. Usually it involves superheroes. I don't know if we ever had a Bruce Lee versus Muhammad Ali one. I do remember us having ones that dealt with boxers occasionally when I was a kid. I don't want to date myself, but it could have been Ali. It did make me think about it for a little while. And I would say it depends on what the rules are. It depends, are they having a fight where it's like no holds barred, mixed martial arts style, or does Bruce Lee does it have to conform to boxing rules? Or, and I think it just depends on what the rules are, who would actually win such a fight. I
Yeah,
know.
maybe they're foreshadowing some kind of physical conflict later in the season.
Well, it feels like it should have been a conversation that should have taken place, season 4 of Breaking Bad, as a build up to like the two titans, going up against one another or something. Whereas, like, I don't know what this would be foreshadowing, but totally, there could be any number of things. I kept thinking we would see what's her name? He mentions her at the end of the scene, at the end of the act rather, the woman
Lydia.
Lydia. I kept thinking Lydia would show up at the end of it saying, "Yeah, that's not really what we had in mind." What's funny about it is it reminds me of one of the famous things with mobsters, where one of the things that they do, and they do this on The Sopranos all the time, where you basically just collect a paycheck for not doing anything. And so sometimes these mob guys will just show up to a construction site and just like, sit in lawn chairs hanging out while they're collecting the same check that all the construction guys are getting. And it's kind of, it's always been like a big thing with criminal enterprises, this whole thing. It's kind of like semi-legitimate where people just are collecting paychecks, but even though they don't do anything, which is why a lot of construction work, infamously takes way longer than it should. Spoiler for a mob infused industry. So I think it was funny that Mike, is the total opposite of that. Like, well, I can't keep taking a paycheck for not doing anything all this time. I got to earn my keep. It was just ridiculous. Where's your weight belt? But it was still nice thing. I was like going, is he getting paid that weekly? Because that's a nice, if that's weekly, that's a nice check.
Yeah, that's a lot of money for Albuquerque 2003, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he could eat anywhere. He could do First Watch and Waffle House in the same day. Where does that leave us?
Yeah, he is not a First Watch kind of guy. You know he's gonna go to greasy ass Waffle House any chance he gets.
I think he's just a pure, simple diner guy. I mean, of course, we've seen him in a diner several times. That was his thing. But he's a classic. He strikes me as a classic diner guy.
Yeah,
But
well.
he'd also be the guy who, like, someone would sit with him and say, "Hey, do you mind if I put something on the jukebox?" He'd be like, "No." "You put on that Journey song, I'm gonna beat your ass." No. I think that takes us. Am I correct? Are we going to? Oh no! Oh, now we got the stuff with the funeral. Again, what I said earlier about how. It's nice. It's interesting how they almost deliberately skip over things, like
Oh,
at the.
before we
Okay,
do the
go
funeral,
ahead, please.
I just want to point out that the I didn't check the fire number exactly, but the mail the paycheck that Mike gets from Madrigal, that's the actual road that his house is on in real Albuquerque. I'm not sure if it's the exact same street number, but it's the same street that it's really on.
Oh, that's cool. Nice.
Yeah, that's all. Okay, go ahead.
The thing that was interesting about there was a couple interesting things about the funeral. Number one, it was cool that they got some pretty well established character actors who have a long resume of work who've been on the show just to show up either in the background or just like for a single line,
Yeah.
which I mean I kept seeing like Ed Begley Jr. there and I was like and
Yeah.
he's basically out of focus in fact. But he's so recognizable, you can't miss him. And I kept going.
Oh yeah.
I love that he's there. He didn't have to be there, but
Oh
I
yeah.
love
Well, this makes the show just feel more realistic. Of course, he would be at that funeral, but the fact that they're willing to bring Ed Begley Jr. to Albuquerque to shoot a scene, it's
Yeah,
pretty awesome. And
exactly.
just
And the same with the actor. I actually know his name. His name is Dennis, and he's got like a Greek last name. He was the lawyer that they Kim almost, I think. But he
Yeah,
actually,
Schweigert.
yeah, Schweiger, right? He's also a guy who's done a ton of things. He's been around for a
Right.
while, so
Gotcha.
I really like that they did that. And they even brought back the wife, the
Yep.
ex-wife, who's actually, she's on, if I'm not mistaken, that's the same actress who I is on Castle Rock. She's like the new warden at Shawshank prison on Castle Rock right now. So that's why I recognized her so quickly. And then I realized, oh, that's right, she's the wife. She's Chuck's ex-wife too. And she's just there sitting there, and we see her for like what, a minute,
If
sobbing a
that,
little
if
bit,
that,
if
yeah.
that. So
Yeah.
I really like, but what was interesting also, other than the fact they were able to amass all these people there, although I kept looking for their former secretary to see if she would show up or not, was other than the people, coming over to Jimmy and giving their respects, I'm sorry for your loss, etc. One obvious thing that we're spared, so to speak, is any sort of eulogy kind of moment. And I was wondering if, because we listened to Howard do the obit earlier in the episode, we don't really need to sit through a eulogy as well. So,
Right.
but as a result, we didn't get the, again, what might have been, and I'm sure it would have been a great scene, but it might have been the obvious scene of of Jimmy going up to talk and not being able to say anything or being
Yeah.
vindictive. They ju I just like, no, we don't need to do that. That's not what we're going to do here.
Yeah, it's
We
very refreshing, like when you like think something's gonna go one way and they just don't do it because they just don't have to. It's really nice.
Oh yeah,
And
which
we didn't miss anything by not seeing that. Odenkirk would have did a good job with the scene, don't get me wrong, but we didn't need to see it.
no, and I'm glad they didn't, because I think it would have diminished what comes next. And what comes next, to me, I think, is the most significant thing in the entire episode, by
Oh
far.
yeah.
I think the last 5 minutes are that. That's what I tuned in for. That's what I'm going to be thinking about from this point on.
Yeah.
And what I'm talking about, they're back at the house. Howard is with them, and Howard has to get something off his chest. His conscience is eating away at him, and he's basically feeling like he's taking the blame for what Chuck did. And that's when he's talking about how he forced him out of the law firm. And one of the key things he says, because if he had just talked about how he forced him out of the law firm and severance, but like the scene we had seen, brilliant. Back in
Interesting.
back in season three, it would have been acceptable. But the key thing there is he mentions that it was all over the insurance company deciding to, up their rates across the board, blah blah blah, and that's what led to this whole thing where he wanted, where I think Chuck wanted to sue the insurance company and they didn't, and it became a big back and forth thing, which basically boiled over, and Howard just wanted to oust him as a result of that. That's
Yeah.
what the, and then those if I remember, the whole reason why that insurance thing happened is because Jimmy decided to be vindictive. And he
Yeah.
put on that whole show with the insurance company and revealed things he didn't have to, which led to them investigating and then deciding they needed to, double or quadruple the rates or whatever it was. So
Yeah.
the blame really does. If you connect the dots, this is actually what started this horrible row of dominoes to fall. Was something that Jimmy did, and it wasn't something Jimmy did for the greater good or thinking, trying to
No.
do the right thing, like his stuff which he could say about the tampering with the files with Mesa Verde, because he was trying to help Kim. This was something he did just to be spiteful, because he was just
Yeah, oh,
pissed.
yeah, totally. And I mean, he didn't even go to the insurance company for a reason to screw Chuck over. He went there like for his own reasons to try to do whatever, and then just as an afterthought, he just, decided to screw Chuck over just being a little piece of shit. And there's consequences to that.
So I think the number one thing is, once they establish that, it's like, Oh, geez, Jimmy actually does play a part in this, and it's not in a good way at all. And then it's what he says to Howard, which is like the oh my God. When I guess he essentially says that because they have that moment, you know, he says the thing he basically confesses to Jimmy, and he doesn't know what to do with himself, and he's clearly doing this with the expectation that pretty much anyone, you know, human, you know, would say it's not your fault. You know, this isn't, you know, don't, you know, you can't take the blame for it. Whatever, something along those lines. There could be 800 different ways to say that. Instead, he says, well, Howard, I guess that's your cross to bear. Or gonna be your cross to bear. And then he gets up, and it's all of a sudden, it's kind of like he's almost like he's chipper again. He's whistling, he's gonna make coffee, he's talking about the damn fish and the fish tank, whatever. Howard, I don't remember Howard's reaction being much of a, he's just kind of just blank. But I know Kim looked, I think the last shot was of Kim looking stunned, if I'm not mistaken. That, now, here, I'm trying, now, we've watched three seasons and one episode worth of Better Call Saul now. And we've had a couple moments, and we always call them like, oh, this is like a moment where it's like a little hint of the quote unquote becoming Saul Goodman thing. Which always troubles me because I never think of Saul Goodman being a totally soulless character the way some people seem to think of him as. He's not scrupulous, but he's not soulless, whatever. But there have been a couple moments where it's like, ooh, like the one we just mentioned at the insurance company. Or what he was doing to those old ladies, although, but his conscience got the better of him, and he ended up, you know, making himself look bad in order to repair their friendship and stuff. This, I don't want to say the obvious, and it's going, oh, this is an, oh, look, it's another step of him becoming Saul, but wow, that's, I thought that was one of the darkest things we've seen this character do on this show so far.
Yeah, this for me, it kind of had the same. I had the same physical reaction, like when you would see watch an episode of Breaking Bad, where you know where Walt would be, you know, Walt would be like, you know, fighting against the bad guys or something, and then he would do just something that would just make your skin crawl, and like that's how I felt here. Just like, oh, I went from being like, you know, oh, you know, Jimmy's going through some stuff, he's going through some shock, and just like, oh, okay. You know, and I mean, I think, you know, I'm not sure exactly what's going on with him there. I think there's probably like, you know, it's like his like, you know, his form of denial is just like, you know, bam, throw up this wall, you know, let Howard think it's whatever, and just doing that. That's the way I see it. But either way, it's just bad.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah, and it did kind of remind me of some stuff in Breaking Bad much later in its run, where and I think those were the moments when you realized at that point, oh, Walt's really, I keep forgetting that Walt's kind of gone far down a dark path at a certain point. The way he could be cavalier about certain things when it wasn't, and it wasn't done just as a release of tension or for the right reasons. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was in season five. Of course, yeah, the great episode with the whole train robbery heist thing. Great episode. And but of course, that episode culminates in the death of an innocent child, the kid who gets shot. By Jesse Plemons. Oh, spoiler! Sorry, guys. For people, in case any of our listeners didn't watch Breaking Bad first, sorry. Anyway, I think the following episode, I think Jesse's all screwed up about it and whatever. I don't recall Walt being all that screwed up about it.
No.
I think he's pretty much, he's just, well, I don't know, you know, whatever. And he makes the, what was Jesse Plemons' character's name on that show again? It's been so long.
Todd.
Todd, thank you. I'm getting confused because of Fargo and then the USS Cavalier episode of Black Mirror. Just not. It's been. So, I haven't done a Breaking Bad rewatch since, and I've never rewatched the last season either. So wow, hard to believe. It's still shrink wrapped in plastic, in fact. So yeah, I thought there was an eerie little parallel there, and it just it made me worry about Jimmy. And I know I just said Saul Goodman was never a soulless character, but it made me worry about Jimmy's soul a little bit there, because like, ooh, that's, I don't know, man. That's pretty bad. I don't. So, and what's interesting about this upcoming season, we can all kind of think about and anticipate where the storylines may be going, as far as the stuff with, with Gus Fring and Mike and Nacho and whatever. I honestly have no idea what the season's going to have in store as far as Jimmy slash Kim is concerned. I didn't watch the first whatever minutes of the show that came on after it to see scenes from the rest of the season. Like, nah, I don't need to see scenes. I'll see.
Yeah, I never watched that.
Yeah, it's so
I don't even know
insane.
what the name of the episode was. What was the name of the episode? I forgot.
The name of the episode was Smoke.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I knew that. Well,
I know
okay.
that because before the episode, I had a different intro for us in mind, and there was going to be some rhyming involved. Although I guess Bruce Lee and Ollie kind of rhyme slightly. Well, Lee, not really. Anyway, I'll tell you what. Now I won't use it for a future episode. I was going to say the Pepsi to my Coke, the vape to my smoke. But then when I heard the Bruce Lee Ali thing, I was like, I gotta go with the Bruce Lee Ali thing here.
Yeah, plus vaping is so lame, I'd rather be a smoke too, because even though that's dumb, I'd rather be that than vaping.
I know, but that's why I was going to say
Wow.
it. There's no friends in podcasting. Anyway, so I mean that was essentially it. I mean, I thought what was interesting was that word interesting. God, I should have a ban on that word.
Ding.
For a season premiere, it was, to a certain extent, it was surprisingly low key. Although, since we're dealing with the aftermath of a death of a major character and something that would affect Jimmy so much, I guess that it kind of had to be that way.
Yeah, but no, but it definitely it kind of feels more like an epilogue to a season than like the start of a new season. You know, like if
Yes.
episode 9, yeah, if episode 9 was cray cray, episode 10's just like, okay, here's what
Right.
we're gonna do. But this
Right.
feels like an episode 10, yeah.
If the finale had, if they had like made it like an hour and a half long or something, and they would have, some of the stuff they wouldn't have used necessarily, but they could have done the next day thing and ended with the moment of him doing that to Howard. So it would have ended on kind of like almost a chilling moment with Jimmy going like, oh, that's not a good sign. Because
Yeah.
it's and I'm going to echo something that I know Odenkirk himself has said, because I just freaking read it like
Huh.
7 hours ago today, I think. And I can't believe, and I can't believe I'm saying this, because I never would have said this like during like say season one. There's part of me that actually is dreading him becoming Saul Goodman,
Oh, yeah.
because the longer this show has gone on. And I don't, not dragged on, but gone on in a good way. There's been so much more to him, and yeah, he screws up, and there is actually, even we hate to think it, but there are some elements of truth to, what Chuck has said to him, because he has hurt people and does do things. Maybe, and it's not usually with necessarily with malicious intent, except, at the insurance company. But it makes it that much sadder to know that he's going to go a certain way, that he's going to lose those qualities that kind of make him so appealing now. And of course, the other, and it goes hand in hand with, we've been wondering since season one, and I think it's still the big question, what's going to happen with Kim? I'm fascinated to see what's going to happen with her. because I can't begin to know. I mean, there's so many, and you can throw out 100. There's so many things they could do. I mean, she could leave, she could die, or whatever. There's part of me that keeps thinking I'm gonna see her pop up in the freaking Jean scenes at one point, which would just totally blow my mind. Now, they'd have to make her look a little older, but actually, I keep forgetting that Breaking Bad doesn't take place that many years later. I keep forgetting about that. I keep thinking like the Jean stuff is taking place like now, like 2018, which is like no, it was 2007. I think seven? Is that when Breaking... I forget. Is that when Breaking Bad is supposed to have taken place?
I don't remember. Something like that.
It's like it might have been 2000. Well, they just had the 10-year anniversary. And the entire length of Breaking Bad takes place over the course of a year. I think roughly a little more than a year, I think. Or a year plus. Maybe it's 2 years. Does he have two births? He begins at 50, yeah. 51, yeah. 52.
Yeah, 52 is from the Denny's, 50 is from the pilot, and 51's like when, you know, Skyler really doesn't want to make him bacon, but just kind of does it.
All right, so if we're going to say the show started in 2008, then maybe it ends in 2010. Okay, no one cares. I don't know why I'm wondering about that. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. It's one of those things where I know it's taking its time, but I love these characters so much I don't mind spending that time with them. But on the other hand, you know, I'm still eager to see things really kick off with some of these characters. I want to see what's going to be happening with Jimmy, because I have no idea where he's going at this point. I want to see Mike being involved with doing stuff with Gus Fring again and where that's going to go and so on and so forth. And you know that Nacho is going to have to play some part with Jimmy at some point later on, because that's the very first time we see Saul Goodman on the thing. He says Ignacio, which is his actual name, so we know, which also means he doesn't die. But there's many things to be excited about. I'm really happy it's back. I had a lot of fun watching it. So
yeah, totally. Good stuff. I guess I have some feedback listeners to talk about, but Brian texted me about it. He wasn't able to be on the podcast tonight. Brian, the podcaster, took me off the Legion podcast last year. He said he really enjoyed it. Some anxiety inducing moments with the opening sequence and the guy whose car Mike tampered with. His only question was whether or not Jimmy was sad or acting. After Howard gave Jimmy the opening to blame him, it appeared to be the opportunity Jimmy needed to absolve himself, and he just started rebounding.
I don't think Jimmy was acting at all.
Yeah.
Jimmy's actions are to a certain extent, they're a little hard to explain I think initially Jimmy sees an out. Because it, for a moment there, it looks like, oh, this really is Howard's fault. But then when Howard goes a little further with the story, and then you realize, yeah, it's kind of your fault, Jimmy. But at that point, I think there's a sense of denial here, and Jimmy had already locked into, oh no, he's going to blame this guy. Keep in mind, Jimmy has no love for Howard anyway. You know,
no.
I mean, we see that Howard has become a far more sympathetic and understandable character. But most of those scenes have tended to more often be with Kim as opposed to as much with Jimmy, whatever. Even if he regrets some of his actions he did at Chuck's behest, whatever. But
yeah.
I don't think Jimmy's ever, quote-unquote, you know, ever forgiven him for the way he acted towards him and so on, whatever. So
yeah.
No, I'm gonna go with, you know, Jimmy's just was a reprehensible thing he did, and I think it's his way of dealing with the grief now is going to be, I'm gonna leave it on this guy, because that makes me feel better that he feels so bad. Which is not good.
Yeah. And then I have a message for you from Gott, who sends his love to you. And I'm supposed to tell you something about the Yankees. Yeah. And that's all the
Really? All the he did that?
Yeah.
He doesn't comment on that on Facebook for the last 5 days. He just posts his stupid Cubs win pictures all the time, like some sort of, you know, pathetic form of fan. Yeah, no, just kidding. I'm sure your Cubs will do very well, even though they're not going to make it to the series this year. Sorry, guy. Yeah, my baseball team has not had the best of weeks. This has probably been, for me, probably the worst I've seen them in, like, four series I've seen them in, like, in 14 years.
Oof.
So, yeah, that was, it kind of sucked. But luckily, I got some really good news today in my real life that kind of, like, made me think, you know what, baseball, I don't care. Everything will bounce its way out eventually. And if they win, they win. If they lose, I'm not getting anything out of it other than the entertainment anyway, so who cares?
Cool. I can't wait to hear your good news after the podcast when the listeners don't get to hear it. So,
yeah, they don't need to hear it.
Yeah, do them anyway, bastard.
All right. So, if you enjoyed listening to this podcast, chances are you'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. That page is the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Look it up on Facebook. Listen to Dan make weird noises. Like the page and join the conversation about any number of TV shows. And occasionally some other things seem to pop up on that page, but it's mostly about TV shows and maybe movies a little bit. And
the Beatles.
And musical preferences and food, whatever. Anyway, you know, whatever. Join the page. We've got like maybe 7 or 8 people talking. That's about it. Anyway. Speaking of only 7 or 8 people, you can also track us down on iTunes and subscribe to our feed. Again, type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed and rate and review us there. And like I've been saying lately, which by lately I mean a couple months ago, you can just type Serious TV Drama Podcast in Google. And apparently there's a whole bunch of places you can find us, and which I have no idea how or why it gets in these other places. But, yeah, you can watch us on YouTube, apparently. I think I must be clicking a button. Now it shows up on YouTube. And then YouTube keep going after us for using copyrighted music. So all these artists all think they're getting money from our podcast. It's like, no, we don't have any ads. We're not making a dime on this. So good luck, guys. And is there anything I'm forgetting? Huh. Oh, Twitter. Yeah, wow, it has been a while. You can follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is Serious TV, at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. And that's it. I know we ran a little longer than we like to for Better Call Saul, but it was our first podcast in a couple months, so deal with it. I'll try to be a little. I don't know if I was too recappy or not. I'll try to be less so in the future.
No, it was fine. We just found plenty of stuff to talk about. There's a fair amount of stuff going on here.
Oh, and also you had mentioned that our friend Brian had contacted you with a little bit of feedback. And I think even though your mic got a little fuzzy, and you're mentioning how we're basically trying to oust you from the podcast.
Because
a lot of fun things rhyme with Brian. I realize. No, just kidding. So, we should mention we.
Really?
Yeah, lion. Lion.
Oh.
Cyan. Anyway, denying. It might be fun. Again, it might be difficult this season because it just occurred to me if Jimmy doesn't have. His license to practice law, there might not really be any law things that happen this season. But if there should be an episode or two or more that do deal with legal stuff, Kim's still practicing law, after all. Howard's still on the show. But we might bring Brian on just for a little segment because he's an actual, you know, real deal criminal defense attorney extraordinaire out in the boonies of Kentucky. So, you know, he can give us some insight on the accuracy and validity and so on of it. I was actually reading an article with some famous entertainment lawyer in Los Angeles who doesn't represent anybody on the show, but was talking about the last couple seasons of Better Call Saul and saying when they do get into law stuff, they're pretty much on the mark. You know, like all the stuff that was going on with Chuck and Jimmy, I was like, yeah, that's pretty much how it would go. So I was like, hey, good for you guys. Anyway, let's call it a night. So, Dan, it was nice talking to you once again. If you're still there, did you fall asleep yet?
I'm here. I think I had my finger over the mic. Sorry. Yep.
There'll be no Fartgate on this podcast.
Nope.
Because I just let him go. Anyway, we will be back next week with the next episode of Better Call Saul. Apologies for the podcast that we said we would get around to doing and we never did. Not that anyone was banging down our door wondering where they were. Maybe sometime in the future we'll do them. Who knows? Any number of things. I've even been entertaining the idea of doing a podcast side project, and I realized I don't have time to do this one. What am I thinking? Shut up, Scott.
Yeah. So, yeah, we still have to do the part two of that like TV shows we like from like some decades or something.
correct me if I'm wrong. Not only... This has to go back to a really long time. People who actually listened to us like the first year we were podcasting. Because we did one podcast that was us talking about TV shows from the... was it like the 60s and 70s? And the next one's going to be
so
like
long,
80s
I don't even
and 90s.
Remember.
Here's what I... Correct me if I'm wrong. I think we actually recorded it, but the recording came out crappy or I didn't like whatever. I thought there was like a million glitches. And I think that was one of our first like little... You know, off screen podcasting spats where all of a sudden we didn't record for a while, and we never re-recorded it. I still every once in a while I go through like my night table looking for like an old W-2 or a transcript or something, and I find the print. That's how long ago I was printing out pages for a podcast. I haven't done that in like 4 years. I don't have a printer. I was like, look at this, I had colored ink and everything. I was like, wow, I picked that shot. I seem to remember saying this out loud. Like, and then I realized, oh yeah, we recorded that. And I was like, okay. And they're like, nah, it sounds bad. No, we can't put this out. I was like, argh. And then, you know, I was bitchy and being, you know, prima donna, and you were being you and me and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the infamous podcast we never did. And what's funny, if you think about it, I just realized that was the podcast I was going to cover the 80s and 90s.
Right.
And then when we had Jack on, Jack Glatfelter from the Jay and Jack Podcasting Empire, we did that for our 200th podcast. We actually all did our lists that covered like the 21st century. So yeah. Without even realizing, we actually skipped over the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And
it's been so long since we recorded that two shows that were on my list both came back and aired one or two seasons that have completed since then.
That's right. You're absolutely right. That's pretty funny. It's been so long, at least one show on your list, which I'd never seen before, which had one of the longest runs of all the shows on your list, I've not seen in its entirety. 170 something episodes.
Yeah. That's oops.
We're so stupid.
Yeah. All right. It's almost 2 your time and 1 my time. So let's go to bed.
All right. And then we're gonna start doing a new Mad Men podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm down.
There are all those seasons we didn't do. That all these shows I haven't rewatched because there's so much too much stuff on than just. And I realized, like, I have, like, a couple Mad Men seasons that are still in the plastic. And the final season of Breaking Bad still in the... I never even watched the DVDs or whatever it is. Or I don't even know what they are anymore because they're just sitting there. And I just didn't have the heart to sell them at any of my yard sales. So much to watch. Anyway, nope. All right. We've rambled past an hour and a half. So, thanks for listening. We'll check you guys out next week. Have a good night.
Yep, good night.
We three, we're all alone, living in a memory. My echo, my shadow, and me. We three, we're not a crowd. We're not even company. My echo, my shadow, and me. What good is the moonlight, the silvery moonlight that shines above? I walk with my shadow, I talk with my echo, but where is the one I love? We three will wait for you, even till eternity, my echo, my shadow, and me.
We three, we're all alone. Seem like we're living in a memory. That's my echo, my shadow, and me. We three, we ain't no crowd. Fact is, we ain't even company. That's my echo, my shadow, and me. You know, I've been wondering, what good is the moonlight, that silvery moonlight that shines way, way up above? Yeah, I walk with my shadow, I talk with my echo, but where is that gal that I love?
Wait for you, even till eternity, my echo, my shadow, and